Good to see everybody out again this evening. We're going to continue kind of walking through the story of Jesus, and maybe not as traditionally as such from the pulpit. Okay? Maybe more like a class, maybe more than sermons is what I'm delivering here on these Sunday nights. Got Casey takes a Sunday night, and we have our day of fellowship, and then we have a preacher on the fourth Sundays, and so that's just kind of one Sunday night. And so we've been kind of walking through some lessons about Jesus, and not trying to step on Rick's Sunday morning class toes at all. And I've been trying to work a PowerPoint to where maybe I can explain a little bit more of what I'm saying, but today that didn't work out. I thought I was doing a good PowerPoint, and then when I plugged it in, it didn't match many of the words I had on my paper. So we all may be in for a surprise tonight. And again, I just ask for some grace, as I know these are different. They're not the typical type sermons that we have on Sunday night. So we're just going to continue talking a little bit about Jesus. Last time we talked about the manger, the place and the setting of where Jesus was born, the shepherds and the wise men coming. Tonight we'll talk a little bit about Herod and Herod's lineage. Now, we come to Luke in Luke chapter 2. There, that gospel, after the birth of Jesus, Joseph and Mary, they follow the law of Moses. And so that meant that they had their son circumcised. It meant that Mary observed the days of purification. So after a Jewish lady would give birth, there were a certain number of days that she was considered unclean. And so she would have to abstain from certain things for a certain number of days, and it kind of varied depending on whether she had given birth to a boy or a girl. It could be two boys. That could change things. Lots of things could change that, and that's all explained in Leviticus chapter 12. It would be around this time that Jesus would be presented to the temple, or at the temple, and we're told that two individuals had waited many, many years to see Jesus, or to see the Messiah. Simeon and Anna were able to see the baby Jesus when he was presented at the temple. In the Gospel of Matthew, we're given some more details. Joseph is then instructed by an angel to take Mary and Jesus to Egypt because King Herod is planning to kill the baby. And so this evening we're going to talk a little bit about two questions I hope we answer is number one, who was Herod? And number two, maybe, you know, what was his problem? What was his issue? And so Herod, that's mentioned in Matthew chapter 2, that guy's name is Herod the Great. And you're getting ready to find why a PowerPoint would have been really good to have. but Herod the Great, he's the first Herod, and that can make it a little bit confusing because Herod is his actual name. But Herod is also going to become a title of subsequent rulers. And so this Herod is a ruler. He also goes by the name of Herod, also known as Herod the Great. Everybody got that. Herod the Great was the king of Judea, Galilee, Adaria, and Trachonius, this very, very large kingdom. And as kings have been known to do, Herod had more than one wife. He had a few wives, and so he had a lot of kids. Four of his sons, as well as some of his grandchildren, are mentioned throughout the New Testament. And sometimes, again, that gets a little bit confusing because we're going to see the word Herod, and we might associate that with Herod the Great mentioned in Matthew chapter 2, but it might really be a completely different person. And so just to sort of try this out a little bit, we'll talk about some of Herod's sons. And the first one is Philip. His name is Philip. But Herod the Great did a really unstable thing in deciding to name two of his children Philip. So we're going to call this guy Philip number one, okay? And Philip number one was not a ruler. He did not rule. His claim to fame is that he's the father of Herodias. And we can see that in Matthew 14 and in Mark chapter 6. He's also the father of Salome, who's mentioned in Matthew and Mark. Now, she's not mentioned by name. She's just mentioned as the daughter of Herodias, but it was the daughter of Herodias and Philip I being her father. So the second son is Herod Antipas. And Herod Antipas, his name isn't actually Herod, right? He's using that as a title. His name is Antipas. And so he was the tetrarch of Galilee, and that's noted in Luke chapter 3, verse 1. And when Herod the Great died, his kingdom was so large that it actually gets broken up into different pieces. And Herod Antipas became the tetrarch or the ruler of a smaller area, the area of Galilee, but he was allowed to use the title of Herod. And so Herod Antipas is the second husband, let me get that right, is the second husband of Herodias. And he's the one who we know that has John the Baptist beheaded. And as the story goes in Matthew 14 and in Mark chapter 6, even there's a brief mention in Luke chapter 9, a young lady comes and dances in front of Herod Antipas. And the young lady who dances in front of him is Salome, who is his niece slash stepdaughter. And so he was so pleased with what he saw, he made a deal with her. He gave her a promise and he said, anything you want, up until half the kingdom, you can have. And so she goes back to her mom and they discuss, you know, what should we ask for? And of all the things, up to half of the kingdom they could have, the one thing they wanted was the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And that's what they got. Herod Antipas had John beheaded. This is also the Herod when Pilate sent Jesus the night before his crucifixion. Pilate's trying to get out of really doing anything, and he learns that Jesus is from Galilee. And he knows that Antipas is in the city. And so he sends a Galilean man, Jesus, to the Galilean governor, sort of, to try and to get this right. And all Herod Antipas does is listen, right? And he sends him right back to Pilate. And so then we have a third son. His name is Herod Archelaus, and he's referred to as an ethnarch, and that means he's a ruler of a nation. And again, that idea being he doesn't get his father's entire kingdom, he just gets a portion of it, and he gets to use the title of Herod as well. So Herod Archelaus was the ruler of areas of like Judea and Samaria. And when Joseph leaves Egypt with Mary and the baby Jesus, it's this Herod that he's trying to avoid. And so he goes around Judea, if you'll remember, in order to get back to Nazareth, because Archelaus has this really bad reputation of being extremely vicious and a brutal ruler. So now we get to Philip number two, right? He's around. And he was a tetrarch of a place called Iturea and Trachonius. That's also mentioned there in Luke chapter 3 in verse 1. And that's all we know. That's it on Philip number two. Aristobulus, that's another son. He's not mentioned anywhere in the Bible. But the key part that Aristobulus plays is he's the father of Herodias, who ends up marrying two of her uncles, and so he's the father of Herod Agrippa the First. And so Herod Agrippa the First, that's the one, you know, who has the guards killed when he thinks that Peter has escaped from prison, when the angels have released Peter. He's the one that does that. He's also the one in Acts chapter 12 that's giving the speech in front of the people, and the people said, he's like the voice of God. You know, that's how he was speaking, that he was not a man, that he was God. And you know, that suited Herod Agrippa pretty well. He kept it going. And so because he wouldn't give God the glory, scripture tells us that he was struck down and that he was eaten by worms and he died. Now, Aristobulus, though, as a grandfather, he also has a role to play because his granddaughter Drusilla, you'll know that name, Drusilla, she married Felix, who was the governor of Judea, who Paul would have to make a defense for before in Acts chapter 24. Drusilla, the granddaughter, was there. Paul also makes a defense in front of King Agrippa II, the king of Judea. That would be another grandson of Aristobulus that we see in Acts chapter 25.
Another name would be Bernice. Bernice is another granddaughter to Aristobulus. Acts chapter 25 tells us that Bernice was present with her brother Herod Agrippa II when Paul gave that defense to him. I think maybe one other name that's maybe worth mentioning is Antipas, and I'm probably saying that wrong. And he's also not mentioned in the Bible. We've got to go to the work of historians to find him. Herod the Great thought that Antipas was way too ambitious. And so he asks Rome for permission to assassinate his own son. And so, that would, you know, Herod the Great, not going to win Father of the Year. And so he does. He gets him executed. His treatment of Antipas hopefully alarms us and tells us really a great deal about the kind of person that Herod the Great was. Herod the Great ruled from 37 B.C. To 4 B.C. And one of the things I think that sometimes troubles people when they see 4 B.C. is that thought that, well, that means he wasn't alive when Jesus was born, right? How could he have been the Herod who have wanted to kill Jesus or end up killing all of those baby boys in that area? Well, we need to remember A.D., it means the year of our Lord. It doesn't begin after Jesus' death. It begins at the advent of Jesus, at his birth. And so there's no zero A.D., right? 1 A.D. is where it begins, and we like to think and we want there to be a really smooth transition at the end of B.C., and the beginning of A.D. that's really nice and crisp, just like passing from 2023 to 2024. But the reality is that transition and the keeping track of time and the measuring of time back then just wasn't nearly as crisp as we would like for it to be today. Sort of as an example, historically, Herod the Great's death has been connected with a lunar eclipse that happened in 4 B.C., Now, scientists have told us, though, that there were actually two lunar eclipses in the year 1 B.C. And so maybe that's just sort of one component of the kind of foggy transition between the end of B.C. and the beginning of A.D. So the fact that we might read that Herod the Great's death occurred in 4 B.C. really shouldn't alarm us all that much. If he was actually alive when Jesus was born, Herod the Great, though, walked a very fine line between his political ambitions and his own heritage. His father was Jewish, but his mother was not. And so Herod the Great, he lived his whole life as being known as being a half-Jew. And the elite families of Judea, these people were known as the Hasmonean families, the Hasmonean dynasty. And they considered Herod the Great to be an outsider. Sure, he was still the king, but he really wasn't a true Jewish person, and they never really supported him as the king. They sort of did what they needed to because he was the king, but they never really embraced Herod the Great. And so Herod the Great, he lived most of his life with a lot of paranoia. He seen enemies everywhere that he looked. But one good thing that he was really good at was building things. And he built, and he built, and he built. He had all kinds of building projects going on, mostly palaces for himself. He liked those. He also liked to build fortresses to guard against the enemies from the east and from the south. He also had a lot of paranoia. He also built a really deep harbor that could receive very large ships. Within the city limits of Jerusalem, one of his projects was refurbishing the walls around Jerusalem. He built a large theater in Jerusalem. He redid the water system within Jerusalem. He had a racetrack built in Jerusalem. And of course, again, a palace for himself built in Jerusalem. Maybe most importantly to at least the Jewish people, Herod the Great rebuilt the temple. And that was one of the projects that he was really bent on doing. And he took this massive stone platform that was being constructed, and once that was in place, he built the temple or the sanctuary on top of that platform. And so it made the temple look even greater than before. And so today when you read about that, you may read it as Herod's temple is what it's called. But it's the temple that was reconstructed during the time of Herod the Great. Now, as we all know, when you build all these things, somebody's got to pay for them, right? And those somebodies were the backs of just about all the Jewish people. Herod the Great taxed them very heavily, with maybe within an inch of them being able to make it or not. But they did love all of these structures. It was a very love-hate relationship with Herod the Great. Not only with the Hasmonean families, the elite ruling class of Judea, but just with people in general, that they loved the fact that he had rebuilt the temple and he had did so in such a grand way, but they really did hate the fact that they had to be the ones that sort of paid for it. And we kind of mentioned that Herod seen enemies everywhere he went, and really he had two kinds of approaches to that. One, he would try to sort of placate people. He would try to do something that would please them. And then if that didn't work, then he killed you, right? Then that was choice B. And an example of that is his desire to be fully accepted by the Jewish people and accepted by those Hasmonean families that he married into. But it didn't work for him. They never embraced him just because he married into the family. And as his children got older, he started looking at them pretty suspicious. Like maybe the Hasmonean families might treat them better. And again, had one of them killed in the final days of his life. He had Annabar killed. And we've already sort of talked like that, about that. But even better than that, he had all the Hasmonean families from Jerusalem the day that he was going to die. He had them all come and said, "Come and be with your king as he dies." And so they show up. But his plan was, he had told his guards, "The second I die, you execute all the Hasmoneans." And he put them all in his racetrack. They were all enclosed in this racetrack that he built. And then Herod the Great died. But they didn't kill him. The guards just opened the doors and let him go back to Jerusalem. But Herod the Great, a very evil man, his goal was to take them with him when he died. That was a pattern, I think, in the life of Herod the Great. When he felt threatened, he murdered people. That was a common response. And so when Herod the Great learned that there was going to be, or there had been, a messianic child or a prince of some sort born in Bethlehem, he felt threatened. And his response was, "I'm going to kill the baby." And that's what he tried to do. When he realized that the wise men had tricked him, he was absolutely enraged. And so in response to that, his attempt to kill that baby that was born, he had all the males in the area under the age of 2 or younger killed. And that's alarming to us, right? And rightfully so. It's unimaginable and it's hard to fathom that something like that could ever actually happen. But we have to keep in mind, Herod's got a pattern. 3 of his own sons murdered, so killing sons, that's sort of what he's good at in some ways. So we go back to Matthew chapter 2 and that angel who appears to Joseph while they're in Egypt, and he told Joseph then that it's safe for you to go back home and leave Egypt with Jesus and go back to Nazareth. And that sort of will kind of put a pin right there in the history of Herod. And start next month, I guess, we'll pick up and talk a little bit about the boy Jesus, the going to the temple, being left at the temple, and then maybe into the wilderness and the tempting of Christ in our next lesson. Tonight, if there's anyone here, we want to offer an invitation, the invitation to join Christ, to be part of what he's doing here on the earth today. That the passage of go into all the world and preach the gospel, not just given to those present that day, a commandment that stretches throughout time and space for us today. Really an amazing thing. And so tonight, if you haven't been baptized and you're ready to make that decision, the water is ready. If you have a need that needs to be addressed or a problem that you would like to bring forth for the congregation, now would be an opportune time to come as together we stand and we sing.